a funny thing. Am I still too young? He kissed the woman there. She took his ring, took his babies. It took him minutes, took her nowhere. Heaven knows she'd have taken anything.
All night.
She was a young American. She finds a slinky vagabond. He calls, says he passes a Ford Mustang. Heaven forbid she's taking the thing. But the freak and his title for nothing. This is a step and cuts his hand. Showing nothing, it swoops like a song. She cries, where are all Papa's heroes gone?
Good evening and welcome to Transpositive PDX. We are here tonight with a very special show. Our show tonight is about trans feminism, trans exclusive radical feminism, and the Title IX, the recent changes to federal law under the Not My President administration. But first, let's go around and have everybody introduce ourselves. We've got several guests in studio, and we've also got one over the phone. So let's just all go around, starting to my left, and feel free to use your preferred pronoun.
Hi, I'm Gigi, or Gigi Cassell, and I am a trans activist. I work to just basically, you know, get civil rights and basically equal rights health care wise for the trans community. And I also do a lot of lobbying as well.
And I'm Jean Bryant, and I go by she and her.
I'm Nicolette Schweizer. I go by and them pronouns.
Hi, I'm Andrea Haverkamp. I use she, her pronouns.
Great, thank you. Liam, could we get Blue up? And my name is Emma, and I go by she and her pronouns. And would our other guests in studio like to introduce themselves?
I'm Dimitri, and I go by they, them.
Okay, thanks. So we just had two there. We have Dimitri, goes by they and them, and Paula over the phone. Hi, Paula. How are you?
Hi, I'm good.
Great, thank you. Okay, thanks, Paula. And we just had Rowan walk into the studio. So we have a full house tonight. Transpositive is about trans, genderqueer, gender fluid, gender non-binary, and intersex issues. And tonight we are going to be discussing some really difficult subjects. We just want to honor the fact that right now is a very difficult time for the trans community. And we want to be here as a source of support for the community, and we want to also be here to help inform the community about the changes in law, what's been going on, and how we can fight back. So let's start right away with Paula. Paula Overby is an educator and is a frequent public commentator on issues related to Title IX and the recent changes in federal law as they affect trans students. So, Paula, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes. I'm transgender. I transitioned about 5 years ago. I identify as a male to female trans woman. I'm pretty active in politics in a number of different areas. I ran for U.S. House of Representatives. Currently working with a couple of different groups here in terms of trying to create more or direct some of the energy that's been created by Trump's election. So, you know, there's some positive things going on, I see, from that perspective.
Great. Go ahead, Paula, sorry.
I just recently finished writing a book about gender issues, some of the history of feminism, the gay rights movement, and now the transgender movement. So I'm looking forward to getting that published. But
Great. So, Paula, can you tell us, first of all, just what happened, what's happened with Title IX? What's going on right now that the Trump administration did that's so damaging to the trans community?
What he did, I mean, he rescinded a recommendation from the Obama administration, which provided guidelines to public group schools primarily on how to deal with trans students and allowing transgender students to use the bathrooms of their own identity, bathrooms, locker room facilities, all of it. Of course, Trump rescinded that. It really has no direct impact on any existing statute or law or action that's going on in the courts around the country, with the exception, of course, the Supreme Court now has pushed back on Gavin Grimm's case up there in Virginia, is it? Yeah. That's maybe in our best interest, quite honestly, to have some further introspection review on that before the Supreme Court ordered and created something more catastrophic. It's unfortunate. It's a setback for sure. Ultimately, I don't see it as a major tragedy.
Mm-hmm. You mean the Supreme Court deciding not to rule in this case?
I think there was a substantial amount of risk in that case in terms of what the Supreme Court would decide. And if they had taken that case and ruled on it, I think, you know, we might have at this point in time gained a more negative consequence. I know we were all hoping for something in our favor, but that certainly was no guarantee. And so, I think it's advisable for us to keep, you know, to keep moving forward, to keep doing what we're doing, right? There's a lot of issues involved, way beyond what most people think about or even realize, in terms of women's issues, gender equity. The transgender movement just really drives hard into all of those issues. And a lot of them haven't even been considered or discussed yet. So there's a lot of ground to cover yet. The media, I mean, I think a lot of the focus right now is, of course, on those that transition from one gender to the other. We still have a lot of ambiguity around the queer space, right? Mm-hmm. And that's really just now coming to the forefront of the transgender movement.
Yeah, in the U.S. Trans Survey, over one-third of all the recipients identify as gender queer, gender non-binary, gender non-conforming.
So it's, so at the moment we're basically talking about about a bi-gender society, right? Okay, so we're sort of getting to the point where we're willing to accept that one person can move from one side to the other. But we're still totally unaware of or undecided on what to do about all those people that are really in the middle, mm-hmm. which is, a large majority of our population, actually.
Mm-hmm. So Paula, I'm going to open up the studio here so people can ask you questions. We have several people in the studio today. And I just wanted to throw out the first question, which is, how is this decision specifically going to affect trans kids?
Well, I mean, I think emotionally, I think, is where it's going to hit them the hardest. I mean, certainly it creates, I think, a lot of perception that they're not accepted. I mean, anything that makes them feel unwelcome or unaccepted, of course, is going to be stressful for them. I don't think, it certainly doesn't do anything to help the situation. So, and the same thing is true for their parents. I know the parents, we don't think about that generally, or it's not usually seem to be part of the discussion. But the challenges they face, dealing with school districts and athletic departments, whatever, trying to represent the rights of their children. So it's definitely going to have that emotional impact, and it's certainly a negative impact.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you. So do any of our guests here have questions for Paula? Paula's kind of the national angle. And then we're going to be getting to Gigi and Andrea to talk about some other stuff. But go ahead, Jean. Do you have a question?
Yes, Paula. My name's Jean Bryant. And back to the Title IX interpretations and guidance question. If this administration and Department of Justice is no longer going to advocate and interpret civil rights law on sex, extending to gender and gender expression, doesn't that have a chain reaction potential that is going to extend way beyond the immediate impacts of just the school?
Well, yeah, I mean, certainly the issue of gender is affects all areas of our lives, right? Housing, credit, jobs in particular. But this has always been a pretty ambiguous area of the law and constitutional interpretation. I mean, just consider, even if we just set the trans issue aside for a minute, just consider the basic issue of gender segregation or equity between men and women.
Amen.
We haven't resolved those issues yet. There's an enormous amount of gender inequity. In fact, as things still stand today, women are really a protected class in this society, right? We have the Violence Against Women Act. We have a lot of laws on the books that actually protect women. And so the transgender movement really dives right into the middle of all of that. And so now, what happens when a male transitions to female? I ran into that experience myself in my divorce, okay? After I transitioned during my divorce, and after I transitioned, then I had access to all of these services that were available to women. Legal services, counseling services, things that just simply didn't exist for men. So, you know, it's not a simple issue of including gender under the banner of sex. I mean, predominantly most of the law, most of the culture thinks in terms of gender and sex as still the same thing. And now, it's the transgender community who has put forward the notion that sex and gender are two different things.
Yes.
Right?
They're going to use that right back against us.
That's still, I mean, people are still trying to get their minds around that.
Paul, I think
we're making tremendous progress. But there's still a lot of ambiguity, and the transgender community has a lot of responsibility in, you know, attempting to refine that notion and that idea and what it really means, and
Paul,
what it means for gender equity in general.
Paul, I think we have another question here in the studio for you.
Oh, I was going to wait till she finished.
Go ahead, I'm done.
Oh, okay.
You can cut me off anytime. I can talk all night.
Go ahead. Well, I guess the first thing I was going to ask is, I know that the feminist movement is still trying to pass the Equal Rights Amendment as it is. That hasn't even been passed, and they've been fighting for it since 1974, if I remember right.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, way before that, but go ahead.
Oh, okay. So do you think if that were to get passed, then that might help with some of these issues the trans community is facing?
I think that would. You know, actually, looking at things from a historical perspective, I really do think that the women's movement and to some extent the subsequent gay rights movement has made things a lot easier for the transgender movement. The Equal Rights Amendment is kind of the tip of the iceberg, exactly, because what does that mean to have equal rights? Now, that would give women equal protection under the Constitution. Women are not recognized as persons under our Constitution, as absurd as that might seem. But the reason for that, of course, is that women were were and still oftentimes are perceived as a protected class. Groups that fought the ERA were oftentimes the unions. And it's interesting to note some of that history. Some of the same concerns existed during the fight for the ERA, that it was going to result in same-sex bathrooms. That issue's been around a long time. But I think, yeah, the ERA would definitely be a major step in the right direction. Constitutionally, it sets the stage for proper interpretation of a lot of gender issues.
So, Paula, we have another guest here in studio who has a comment.
Hi, this is Andrea. All of this has me thinking about the limits that exist with law and administrative changes. My mind is going to the fact that domestic violence pretty much all across America is illegal, yet it still happens. Hate crimes are illegal and have been made illegal all across this country. But we've had 9 transgender women murdered so far this year. Discrimination based on your sexuality has been made pretty not uniformly illegal. It's been over and over brought to cities and states, and they've passed ordinances and laws against it, but yet you can still have it done. What do you think about the need for the trans community and feminists all to come together and push for transformational cultural change? Because, I mean, we outlawed slavery, but we still have slavery in the forms of private prisons. I guess that's just my thought, is that there's a lot of limits to as far as we can even get through an equal rights amendment or something like that with a system of law.
Well, that's exactly what I advocate for in terms of political activism. I think we need to move beyond the political activism directly into the political arena. It isn't, there's so many marginalized groups. You named them all, or a lot of them.
Yeah.
But look at our prison industrial complex, right? It's basic slavery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
we still have significant rape culture. Domestic abuse is still a major problem. And I look at it this way from a historical standpoint. I think these are cultural issues primarily, and it's kind of a double-edged sword. And I look at the limit in terms of trans politics and the limits of law. I look at the history of the gay rights movement. Now, in the beginning, that was a movement for sexual freedom, right? It was a movement to a rebellion against police brutality and unjust laws, and, well, police brutality primarily. It was about sexual freedom. Over time, that became an identity, right? So we became a gay rights identity or gay identity. And then it became a fight for protections, right? The Matthew Shepard case, or the hate crimes legislation, the Brady Shepard bill, poured massive amounts of dollars into the very enforcement systems that we're rebelling against.
Precisely.
And that's been, kind of the evolution ever since. Same thing with the Violence Against Women Act, poured massive amounts of money to enforcement systems for lawyers, prosecutors, and police, but did very little in terms of prevention.
Well, Paula, can you, I'm sorry. So we have one more comment in studio, and then we're going to go to our first break. Gigi?
I don't know if that answered her question, but...
We have another comment here in studio. Go ahead, Gigi.
Paula, in the past, in the recent past, we, especially regarding gay marriage, we knew that several states were passing it or overturning the ban on gay marriage in their states, and then eventually it just went to court and all the way to the Supreme Court. Do you see something like that happening similarly where somebody might take the issue of equal rights, like we have here in Oregon? We have the Equal Rights Bill that protects transgender people and people of all sorry, I'm trying to think of the word, but mm-hmm. Do you see something like that going to court, possibly going to the Supreme Court, where it might be decided by the judges instead of just through waiting forever for the Congress to do something?
Well, I mean, would the transgender movement go in the same direction as the marriage equality? It seems rather unlikely. First of all, the marriage equality was had a very specific goal, right? And it was easily defined. What I would take from that is that it was a cultural movement, right? So I'm in Minnesota. We're the first ones to beat that amendment. We fought that 30 times. 30 times we lost before they finally won.
But I guess where it could fall into that line, could it fall into something similar to the 1964 Civil Rights Act? Could that be used as a base to go into court with?
Well, you know, I think we have the constitutional amendments that we need. Or, you know, I mean, we have Title IX, we have Title VII. And I think lawyers are successfully arguing those cases. And they will continue to argue those cases. I don't think that the Grimes case is done. But the issue, of course, is not, I mean, the trans issue is so much more complicated, right? Okay, so what are we fighting for? Bathroom rights? And if the court passed a law that allowed us to use the bathroom, what about, you know, all the other areas of discrimination that we deal with, right? Mm-hmm.
And what about non-binary people who need to use the restroom? And what about the right for non-binary people to get married? Because it's not same-sex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, so it's hard to define it as a legal issue, first of all. So, considering, you know, gender non-conforming or gender queer or bi-gender individuals, right? So which bathroom can they use?
Mm-hmm. Well,
can they use the women's room on one day and the men's room on the next? We as a community need to define those issues ourselves in much more detail, I think, before we can battle them out in court.
Paula, I think we're going to go to our first break, so I'm going to just kind of stop there. We're going to be back in a few minutes with Andrea Haverkamp and Gigi Castle. And can you stay on with us, Paula, and continue to have a conversation with us?
That would be great.
Great. And I do want to make an announcement before we go to our song. I just want to make sure that everybody knows that tonight at the Q Center at 7 o'clock, so right after the show's over with, you can listen to the show as you're driving to the Q Center. Tonight is Say Her Name, and it's this really, really important event being organized by queer and trans people of color here in Portland, and I really hope you come to this event because 9 trans people of color have been murdered in the United States just since the January 1st, 2017, and we're going to be honoring those people tonight at the Q Center. The organizers of this event will be honoring them and, you know, holding up the dignity of trans people of color. So I really hope you can make it to the Q Center. Is that 4015 North Mississippi?
North Mississippi, yes.
Over in the Mississippi neighborhood. So please, please come out tonight and let trans people of color know that you support them. That's going to be at the Q Center at 7 o'clock. So we're going to go to our first break now.
Please tread them gently. They don't like to fall.
Oh, by Jingo.
There's no room for anger. We're all very small.
Oh, by Jingo.
We're painting our faces and dressing in thoughts from the skies, from paradise. But they think that we're holding a secretive ball. Won't someone invite them? They're just taller children. Let's all, after all, man is an obstacle, sad as the clown.
Oh,
Some people are marching together, and some on their own, quite alone. Others are running, the smaller ones crawl.
Great, and we are back. So we're back with Andrea Haverkamp, and we're going to be talking about trans-exclusive radical feminism and feminist theory generally. But before we do, I think Nicolette had an announcement.
Oh, yeah. I was going to announce that next week on March 15th is the first ever International Genderqueer and Non-Binary Pride Day. Again, that's on Wednesday, March 15th, if you want to celebrate that however you wish.
Great. So I'd like to introduce Andrea Haverkamp. Andrea, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. Hi, my name is Andrea. I am a PhD student at Oregon State University, where I study the intersections of identity, social systems of oppression, feminist theory, queer theory. My areas of specialty are in environmental engineering and in queer studies. I hold 2 degrees in engineering and have worked in that field for about a decade, which I think has given me a very nuanced view of gender systems, as it's one of the most masculine, gendered and racially white disciplines and professions in the United States right now.
Mm-hmm. So tomorrow's international.
I have to agree with that.
So tomorrow's International Women's Day. How does the issue of feminism intersect with the issue of trans, genderqueer, gender non-binary identity?
Yeah, so I guess to start out with, there's about as many definitions of what feminism is as there are people. And the best way I think it can be summed up is it's a move for liberatory justice from oppressive systems, originally rooted very much in the oppression of cisgender women in our society by men. And it has expanded as more and more voices have been heard and lifted, from Black feminism to Arab and Arab American feminism, indigenous feminism. So many voices have been added and raised up to make what is obviously, I think, on mainstream TV and in media and movies, it's seen as a white woman's issue, into a movement that encompasses our disabled women, our intersex individuals, disabled women, trans women of color. So it's really hard to have a Women's Day without thinking about all of the different ways in which one can be a woman, and then without also thinking about how framing days like Women's Day and the framing of so many issues as women's issues leave out intersex people, leave out non-binary people, and leave out trans men, many of which who face tremendous sexism and trans misogyny in our society, and who feel it's like, where is the big voice for some of the most vulnerable? I know in a lot of feminist theory, you kind of try to focus on who is being most hurt, and then if you lift up those most hurt, it will lift everyone up. And to some extent, I think like movements like the Women's March and the Women's Day, they're fantastic. I love them, I support them, and I think it's an opportunity for us all to look around and see who is being most hurt under the systems in our society and lift them up. Mm-hmm.
So it kind of echoes the earlier conversation that we were having, where when we make advances in, you know, like the Equal Rights Amendment, if we advance the Equal Rights Amendment, that not just lifts up like cis women, but it also lifts up trans women. It mm-hmm. lifts up gender non-binary.
Yeah. When we
it
fight
lifts
the
up trans women of color.
Yeah. When we fight the prison system, we remember that trans people face some of the harshest violence in prison systems. When we fight against Islamophobia, we remember that there are so many trans, non-binary, and genderqueer Muslims in our country. When we fight, yeah, when the trans people are in all of these intersecting communities. Mm-hmm. And so a fight for against the travel ban and a fight against Islamophobia also helps trans people.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, do you have any questions from the studio for Andrea or from Paula?
Sure. So, as you can see in front of me, I have all these notes about yes. great talking points related to this discussion I was hoping to ask you about. I guess where I would like to start is one of the biggest problems with TERF and trans misogyny in the feminist movement is that it hurts all women by policing women's identities and bodies. Would yes. you like to expand on that?
Yeah, absolutely. For listeners out there, the acronym TERF in trans exclusionary radical feminism, that is what you might see 2 days ago. The Telegraph posted an article from a white feminist who identifies as a woman who claims that transgender women are not women and that transgender men are not men. And a lot of this ideology says that non-binary and third gender, genderqueer folks are not valid and they do not exist. I think that this TERF movement stems from a white supremacist and or settler colonial mindset that seeks to erase Native, Indigenous, South Asian, all of these different gender systems and genders that have existed across the world and throw them into the European Anglo-centric system of gender of which the Europeans and Catholic missionaries came to this country to eradicate. It also, like you said, it's a very ableist movement and a very misogynistic movement because at its root, what it says is that women are defined only by body parts and only by the bodily standards set up by dominant cisgender men. And that falls right into systems of patriarchy. It's ableist. There are so many women who never have a period. There are so many women who are born with androgen insensitivity disorder, who are born with chromosomes very different than XX or XY. There are many women born who will never have menopause, who have menopause as early as age 29. So saying that you have to have a period or have felt that to be a woman, or that reproductive health is a woman's only issue, the feminists who fight for this are hurting all women, especially intersex, disabled, and women of color.
Great. Another point that I think should be addressed is the fact that women are oppressed in so many ways that have nothing to do with their reproductive body parts. Would you like to talk a little bit about that as well?
Yeah. So women in society and are oppressed in many ways. A conceptualization I like to have of what oppression looks like, we typically talk in terms of binaries around all sorts of issues, whether someone is queer or straight, whether someone is able or disabled, whether someone is white or a person of color. And once we combine all of these intersections together, we can start to paint a picture of who the most privileged in society are in our society in sort of a pyramidal fashion. There's kind of the most ideal people in the world. And I think we can look at almost every single president and see that it is a cisgender man, ideally able-bodied, physically attractive, probably capitalist, conservative-leaning, perhaps, definitely not self-identified radical feminist in any sort of way. Probably around 6 foot tall, probably married, perhaps has kids, probably. You know, there's so many different intersections of who probably has a really good time in society and who does not face. And the further and further you deviate that, chiefly among them having a different body or gender projection or gender perception, you start to face more and more disadvantages in society. So it kind of trickles down the more you deviate from all those things I mentioned.
I'd like to make a comment on that.
Yeah.
Sure. Go ahead, Paul.
I certainly agree with everything she said. And that's the perception and the experience that most women have, right? I don't agree. I think that the TERF movement is clearly a sexist movement that supports male misogyny.
I agree.
But on the other hand, they make a valid point that transgender women, okay, who have grown up with a male experience, are not necessarily representing.
I did not have a male experience.
What's that?
I said, and that again, right there. Is another ideology we need to fight against, that there is a male experience, because that is exactly what TERFs say, that there is a male or female experience. and that erases the experiences of so many people worldwide.
Let me take that one step farther from a historical perspective. When I look at the development of women's rights, I see women moving more and more into masculine oriented positions, right? Okay, I mean the conspicuous movement today is to put women into STEM, right? That women's equality can become an economic issue, and it's been driven as an economic issue, and it's been and it's not, right? I mean, you just identified that it's not an economic issue.
So the women's movement did not advocate.
The economic imbalance is a consequence of that.
The women's movement.
But the ambiguity that we create, of course, is there a feminine experience? You're saying that there is no feminine experience, that there is no masculine.
There's
experience.
So many ways to have them that it can't be essentialized. It's a per person basis.
So Paula, okay. we have another question here from Gigi. Go ahead, Gigi.
Maybe it's just because I've seen so many things change for me since I've transitioned, and I look at things a lot more differently now than I did before pre-transition. But I guess the two questions I have is, one, is there maybe a reason why the radical feminists see things in such a black and white statement? They only see male, they only see female, and they only see, and that's all they see. And the other thing is, too, I want to emphasize with you on, I love the fact that you said you didn't have a masculine experience growing up. I didn't either, because, you know, I was always very femme. But I was made to feel that was wrong, and I was put down by a lot of people because I didn't come off masculine. I never came off. I mean, I tried the hyper-masculine thing, and it just didn't work for me. Yeah. Nobody ever bought it. But I guess, is there a reason why they can't see past the fact that they only see black and white in terms of male and female, and that's all they see, and, you know, they can't see anything other past that? And is there any way that we can emphasize that we lose a lot, you know, even when once we transition, by society standards, we lose a lot of what we had pre-transition, how society sees us?
Yeah, you bring up a lot of good points there. That black and white thinking you talk about is actually an educational theory. I guess the most accessible and default way of thinking for human minds, and it's if you look at Perry's scheme of human development, he calls it dualistic thinking. One step above that, you start to accept that there might be multiple realities and multiple right answers in a gray area. And even further past that, you start to get contextualized that what it means to be a man or a woman is different perhaps 100 years ago in the West African country of Liberia than in America in 2017. So it starts to get very nuanced and very tricky. And I think it's a very reactionary, knee-jerk, easy answer to say there are only men, there are only women, it's what I have experienced. And it ties into so many other things that are frequently points of contention in feminism, such as bi people do not exist, such as ace people do not exist. It's this very, very simplistic way of looking at it and talking.
So we have a comment.
Can you make the alternate assertion?
Paula, could you hang in just a minute? We have a comment from someone from the intersex community who's here on our show. So, Tashi, would you like to go?
I would. I would like to expand on that with you, perhaps. What is your experience in your research and your own life of intersex individuals and their own being raised male versus female? It's so expanded upon that you're pressed into a gender physically sometimes with surgeries or in through medications that you have little choice in. There's a biological essence of this, and that itself isn't disputing purely upon the biological binary. There isn't necessarily one or the other, and so that, in reference to radical feminism, there isn't necessarily an easy answer. And I like what you said about the easiest form of psychology. What is the easiest form for us to discuss this idea of having multiple kinds of people physically, mentally, biologically? There's not one black or white, as you said. There's not a binary in this sense. So how do we discuss this to make it easier for us to describe what we're experiencing.
I know for me, thank you so much for your comment and for your question. That resonates with me so much. What I always tell people, or instead of saying men are taught this and women are taught this, to say there is a system of gender in America, and all humans get brought into this system of gender, and all humans have to find out a way of how they internalize it and how they choose to move through it. And a lot of that has to do with safety. And like you said, a lot of it is coercive. A lot of it is pushed upon you. There's a lot of people I know who moved to Oregon specifically because the community and the culture around gender here is very different than perhaps where they were before, where gender systems can be contextualized on a smaller local level and within your own culture and community. I guess I don't know if that answers your question, but I think that there are just systems of gender that exist, and humans themselves find a way of fitting in and navigating, pushing back, and coming to terms with their body and how it's perceived and how it's presented.
So we're going to, we have one more comment from Rowan, and then we're going to go to our last break because we want to give Gigi the last 20 minutes so that Gigi can talk about her experiences and how she helped change the law and is working to change the law for trans women. Go ahead, Rowan.
Hi, I've been puzzling through this whole like TERF thing on my own as well, just being like, where did this come from? And one question I have is like, why does it have such purchase in our queer communities? Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering also, it seems to me like it's particularly strongly emanating from the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
And I have my own theories about that being sort of like from the like deep green resistance, Derek Jensen, Lear Keith world of like a particular subset of the environmental movement. But I wonder if you have any thoughts or theories about that.
Yeah, I'll try to shoot through these fast with attention to time. About the Pacific Northwest focus, I think that because it is such a settler, colonial, and almost white supremacist movement of erasing so many different cultures and identities and gender expressions that come from the system of gender, which was brought over here from Europe, seeming how white the Pacific Northwest is. And also, like you mentioned, it's prevalent in queer communities. We have a richer queer community here, so that allows it to thrive. And I think it's connected to our identity labels that the LGBT community has, and especially those first three letters, have clung to for so long. If I'm a gay man, for example, hypothetically, and I'm attracted to men, what do I do when I'm presented with the around 1% of the population who are trans men? And so much culture in queer communities, in lesbian and gay male spaces, have to do with the body parts associated. So it comes, I think, from a reaction of having to, for cisgender people to start to think about attraction based on gender and not on body parts. Or, I mean, it gets very tricky when it you really say, can. I'm a woman who's attracted to women, you know?
Yeah, it really can. So we're going to take a break, our last break, and then we'll be back for the last 20 minutes of the show with Gigi Castle. And we'll be talking about what Gigi's done for trans women in Oregon. Awesome. Great. And we are back. I would like to introduce our third guest, and I think we still have everyone here too, so we can ask Gigi questions after she has a chance to speak. Gigi Castle. Gigi, would you like to introduce yourself and tell us your story?
Hi, my name is Gigi Cassell. Why? Well, I go by Cassell.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's fine. I'm sorry, Mike. It's fine.
My apologies.
No, you don't have to apologize. I mean, people have been mispronouncing my last name since I can remember. It's not a common last name, so people either call me Castle or Cassell. I just go by Cassell. I was born in Idaho, my parents, I was really lucky. My parents were both raised in strict religions. My mom was raised Catholic. My dad was raised Mormon, but they left the church when I was pretty young. And so I was really taught, you know, to think for myself and question anything I'm told. And so that really helped as I got older. My parents divorced when I was 3. It was kind of a rocky situation, and, you know, my dad went off to prison, so I didn't see him again until I was in my early 20s. My family moved to La Grande, which I don't know if anyone's been to northeastern Oregon, but it's really conservative. It's really white. It's primarily Catholic and Mormon. So I was raised there, and my mom was very much a feminist. I now realize she was probably bisexual because I never saw her date another man again. But, you know, there was always women around the house. So as I've gotten older now, I'm starting to kind of put two and two together and realize, oh, well, you know, that kind of answers some things. She was really open about us exploring gender identity roles, and that, you know, there wasn't specifically just male things or female things or, you know, anything. My brother was able to do ballet. I was able to go around the house wearing makeup, you know, or combing my hair in a rather feminine way, or going through my mom's closet, you know, trying to find the most gender fluid outfit I could and go outside. But my mom wasn't trying to restrict that. She just knew we lived in a pretty conservative area, so I had to play the male role when I went outside or when I was in school. But I did win a couple of times and was able to get, you know, some pink clothing. So I was able to kind of get her to bend to my will just a little bit. And I also got harassed a lot of the time as a kid because I had Asperger's syndrome, and I hadn't been diagnosed at that point. I didn't even know it was a condition until I got older. But so I dealt with a lot of harassment. So I just felt that the safest way to keep myself from being bullied too much was to hold in the things I wanted to express, the gender roles I wanted to express, because I knew pretty early on that there was something different, and I wasn't quite sure. I didn't have a word to it, and there was only like one other transgender person in our town, and I was like, oh my god, I strongly connect with her, but I don't know why. And on top of that, I was struggling with my sexual orientation, which to this day I just call it very fluid, or I call myself queer. You know, I really am not attracted so much to the gender. I'm attracted to the person, you know. And then my mom died when I was 18, right in the middle of my senior year. And being that I grew up in a single-parent household, it was like my focus wasn't so much about my gender anymore. It was like, you know, where am I going to live? Who's going to take care of us? All the legal matters. And so I lived with my aunt and my grandmother for about a year, and I had to repeat my senior year of high school. And then I moved out here to Portland to go to Job Corps for a couple of years. And I went to, I don't know if anybody here is old enough to remember, but it recently was the Escape Club, but back in the back in the late 90s, early 2000s, it was Club Z, and I don't know if anybody remembers it, and which really tells, which makes me feel old when I describe it, but I had some friends take me there one night, and my friend, who has sadly passed on, had put me, was trying to fit a dress on, but didn't have anybody that was the right build, and they didn't have a mannequin, so I put it on, and instantly right there, all these old feelings started kind of bubbling up to the surface. And so I went to this club with them, and I saw all these people of different genders and sexual orientations, and it was like, bing, you know, a light went off. It's like, oh my God, this is what was going on. This is why, you know, this answers so many things. And so I spent years and years and years exploring my gender identity, and I had wanted to transition, but It was the mid-2000s. I had a doctor that was very transphobic, wouldn't let me go on hormones. And then my grandmother started getting sick, and I think that was one of the other reasons I kind of put off transitioning, just because, you know, she had cancer, she had diabetes, she had two replaced hips, you know, no way was I going to put her through this stress on top of everything else she was dealing with. But I did start realizing I couldn't keep suffering anymore in height, repressing what it was that was inside, so I came out as trans. And then I did come out to her. My cousin urged me to come out to her, actually. And so I said, well, isn't she going to reject me? It's like, well, she didn't reject you when you came out as queer. She's not going to reject you now. And I told her, and she was okay with it, which was really great. But she was also like, just be careful. And then she passed on. I didn't realize that she was that close to death, but she passed on. And it was like, after that, I feel guilty about saying it, but I kind of felt free at that point to be able to start transitioning. And so I just went up to my doctor one day during an appointment. I told her, it's like, listen, I've been struggling with gender. You know, I've been struggling with this for years, and I'd like to go on hormone therapy. And I thought I was going to go to a barrage of therapists and everything else. She said, well, that's fine. I'll put you on T blockers today. I'd put you on estrogen, but you were still smoking, so I can't put you on that right away, estrogen. But from that point on, I started going to the HRT. And then when...
It's hormone replacement therapy?
Yep, hormone replacement therapy. And then when OHP started covering transgender procedures, I just assumed, well, hey, they're probably covering facial feminization surgery. So I got my doctor to get me an appointment, a referral for a plastic surgeon. And she got me in with Dr. Lolo Martinez, who works at OHSU. Great. And she's a wonderful doctor, by the way. And so I got in to see her, and then we talked about what I wanted to have done. And she said specifically what she was going to tell the insurance company is, like, it's for your safety, you know, because we want to make sure that, you know, you don't get pointed out as often. So we described what we were going to do. We were going to do a cranioplasty, a brow lift, you know, a hairline advancement. I had thought about doing jaw surgery, you know, realignment, but she said with a lot of things that people don't know about is that, you know, you're cutting a lot of nerve endings when you're doing that. So she didn't recommend doing it. And she said that when we did the surgery, the jaw would just, you know, would match better once the top part was done. And so I got a letter sent, written by my therapist to send to the insurance company. And then I kept calling OHP and calling Care Oregon. It's like, you know, hey, what's going on with this? And da 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 da. And one morning I was asleep and I get a phone call, and I'm always kind of groggy in the mornings. I'm not quite there yet. And I get a call, and the woman on the other end says, your surgery got approved. And I didn't know what surgery they were talking about. I was like, what surgery? You know, it's like, said, oh, facial feminization surgery. It's like, that got approved? And so I about hit the roof, you know, when I found that out. And then we scheduled the date for the surgery, and my phone had died on me for my phone. The disc had disconnected for a couple of days.
So Gigi, can I interrupt you for just a minute?
Yeah.
I just want to let you know we've only got about 5 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. So basically, in a nutshell, I found after I had the surgery, I had told somebody at Basic Rights Oregon that, you know, I'd had the surgery, and then they told me a little bit later on that it had never been done in Oregon, and that's kind of what propelled me into advocacy work. And since then, I founded Portland Transgender Community group on Facebook, and I'm also doing a lot of political lobbying. I did one just recently for reproductive health care in down in Salem, and I'm going back down there this month.
Now, facial feminization surgery still is not covered by OHP,
it's
as far
still,
as I understand.
It's still not covered.
So how can we change things so that?
Well, right now, from what I do know, there are two court cases that are pressuring OHP to cover their cases, and we think that that might snowball enough to cover all the cases if we can win those two court battles.
How did getting facial feminization surgery change things for you?
God, I mean, at least it just felt like there was, I could look at my face finally in the mirror, and it was like, this is what it was supposed to look like all along. And it just released a whole lot of stress having to stare at my face and realize, like, finally I've got the face that I saw inside, but nobody else could see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. Do we have any comments from the studio? Anybody want to talk about this?
Yeah, so I also came from another state to Oregon, and I was wondering what your relationship is with home. I know a lot of trans people and queer people move to urban cities and to city centers for community and for socialization and just kind of leaving rural areas and other states due to the cultures there. What's your experience been, and what's your relationship with home?
Well, I don't really have a relationship with my brothers, and we just haven't talked in years. They had a hard enough time with me being queer. When I came out as trans, it just kind of severed our relationship. But there are people back home that may not be biologically related to me, but they're still, they've known me since I was a kid, so we still have a pretty close relationship.
Mm-hmm. Is it easier to be out here in Portland?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's way easier to be out here as trans than possibly over there. And like I said, as I'm more actively involved in politics, and I'll be honest, like I said, I'd like to make an eventual run for a citywide office. I find that it's easier to be accepted here than it may have been if I was still living in the Grand.
Mm-hmm. Do you think a lot of, like Andrea was saying, do you think a lot of trans and queer people are moving to Portland because it has a reputation as a welcoming place for trans people?
I think so. I've always said that for me, lately I feel like Portland has become the San Francisco for the transgender community here. And we're going to continue seeing that as a lot of states back east that are, especially rural states, you know, red states, that the people that were trans there come here to Portland because, you know, it's safer here for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got about 4 minutes left. So do we have any wrapping up statements? Anybody wants to, any announcements, or are you still with us, Paula?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, great.
Yeah, I'd like to make a statement about the Mac Briggs case.
Okay, Paula, we've got about like 3 minutes. So can you make it in like 60 seconds?
I'll make it quick.
Okay, go ahead.
I just want to say that I think one thing that we need to do as a community is recognize how to accommodate the difference, rather than insist that there is no difference between male and female. And I think it's pretty clear, and it's emphasized by that Matt Beggs case. He's the transgender boy in Texas that had to wrestle with the girls.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay, well, Paula, thank you. So, Paula, people can find you online, Paula Overby. Paula Overby, what's your website?
Paula.overby.com.
Paulaoverby.com. Great. Thank you so much. And Gigi, people can find you at the Portland Transgender Community.
They can either do that, or they can find me at my personal Facebook, which anybody's free to get a hold of me. It's my first name is Gigi, G-I-G-I. My last name is Cassell, C-A-S-S-E-L, and I'll be glad to talk with you about anything.
Great. And Andrea, where can people find you?
If you Google Andrea Queer Studies, Oregon State University, I bet I'll be there.
You'll be, okay, great. So I just want to remind people again, if you didn't hear it tonight, is Say Her Name. It's at the Q Center. It's an event honoring the lives of trans women of color who have been murdered since the beginning of this year. Do we have any closing announcements?
Oh, I also just wanted to remind people one more time that next Wednesday, the 15th, is going to be the first ever International Genderqueer and Non-Binary Pride Day.
Great. Well, thank you so much, everybody. Thank you for joining us.
And I guess the last thing I would say is be persistent and be proactive. That's the only way we're going to get acceptance. If we hide in the shadows, they'll be easier to ignore us.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you. And thank Paula, thank you for joining us from Minnesota. Thank you.
And thank you, everyone.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
Still don't know what I was waiting for, and my time was running wild, a million dead-end streets, and every time I thought I got it made, it seemed the taste was not so sweet. So I turned myself to face me, but I've never caught a glimpse of how the others must see the
faker. I'm much too fast to take that test.
Change it.
Turn and face the strain.
Change it. Sides, but never leave the stream of warm and permanent sand. So the days float through my eyes, but still the days seem the same.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is currently 7 o'clock on the nose. Up next is Hard Knock Radio. But first, this program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Edgefield Concerts, announcing the double bill of Trombone Shorty in Orleans Avenue with St. Paul in the Broken Bones this August. Tickets for Trombone Shorty with St. Paul on sale this Friday at edgefieldconcerts.com.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Oregon Action Plan, Immigration Rights, on Sunday, March 19th at the Concordia University Library in Portland. Oregon Action Plan is a series of events to inform and empower our community. This first event will focus on immigration in Oregon. How is what's happening on the national level affecting people in Oregon? What are organizations doing to support